Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty, prosperity, and the highway to the north, it's Safety Wars. Or, you say, welcome to our season 4 of Safety Wars. Hopefully I got that echo out of here. I'm not hearing it in the headphones. Anyway, eventually we'll get there. Eventually. How's everybody doing out there? Where have I been? I tell you what, when I am able to, I will let everybody know what's going on here. Jay Allen, we had a conversation, I think, if not last week, the week before, on everything that's going on. And we had a lot of stuff going on out there that we missed, but we're going to be covering a little bit each day. So what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about the Great Reset. What exactly is that? What are people talking about with that? Is that safety related? Yeah, it is. Well, it has a lot to do with safety. International law, right? Financial safety, psychological safety, not go nuts. The election coming up in 2024. What's my take on these things? We're going to be talking about that also. The railway accident. How about last week with the big thing out here in Long Island where a company got indicted, I believe convicted, something along those lines. 20,000 fraudulent things going on. OSHA outreach training and New York City DOB training. The licensing stuff, we're going to talk about that because that's another important thing. And, of course, our normal stuff, news and views and everything else. Now, I had to make a decision recently here on... Now, what am I going to do here with a lot of the information I have? Where am I coming from? How did I come up with this whole thing on, with Safety Wars? Where am I coming from? What kind of environment are we doing? And we're going to talk about some of that a little bit more. And the reason being is here, is this. All right. A lot of us are out there, and I always say, with the commercials here, right? I have the hop announcements. Now, for those people out in behavior based safety land, where now we're calling out to you, make sure you have out your secret decoder ring, right? And we'll talk about that here. Here, let me play one of these. I always have this. Here, hold on. We're ready to go. We'll have our Monday clip here. This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
So, so that's an important thing because a lot of the people that we deal with, a lot of our colleagues and friends in the industry, they're not working with HOP. They're still working on behavior-based safety. Now, you can say, well, Jim, what's the issue? Blah, blah, blah. What's it to me and everything else? It's an important thing here it's an important thing because they're creating a very hazardous environment for the safety professional. Well, what do you mean, Jim? Hazardous environment. There's a reason why a lot of us are hated in this field. There's a big reason why. All right? And that is because we have unreasonable expectations of things. So we're going to talk about that for a minute. So, for example, I have a client now that needed a health and safety plan written, fall protection plan. And with me, I have a company policy where I am only going to write safety plans that people are actually going to follow. All right? Someone is not going to read a 75 or 80 page plan. A worker is not going to do that. But a lot of our construction jobs out there require health and safety plans with a lot of filler material that are 75 or 80 pages long. I try to avoid writing this stuff. I had a conversation with a lifelong friend of mine, basically lifelong. I've known him since I'm 13 years old. My birthday is in October. I met him in freshman year of high school. And, you know, we were both 13 at the time, and we're not 13 anymore. So this is going on. This fall will be 40 years. And he is one of the heads of a fire department you've heard of. All right. The city is a city you've heard of. Anyway, we had this conversation. Jimmy, how long should a safety plan be? And I said, look, you have three basic types of safety plans. You have the 75-page plan, right, which nobody is going to read. Sometimes it's more than that. I've had plans out there, especially when you're going to third-party auditing, that are hundreds of pages long. No one's going to read that crap. No, it's not going to happen. So what I try to do is I have the big plan with all the regulatory requirements. Then I have a smaller plan that might be site-specific. Then even a smaller plan where we would call, if you're in the Army Corps of Engineers world, an AHA world, an AHA, or something along those lines, JSA, AHA, Activity Hazard Analysis. That's what I have. All those other plans, yeah, they're nice to have, and they're good for attorneys, especially if you get into litigation, and maybe a little bit of training if you want to do that, but you have to have a plan in place. And that's what the job hazard analysis is for. You have a plan in place that people are actually going to use. That's not going to be shelved somewhere. And that's really the plan there that I try to get to. I try not to even, no, I try to have a very, a plan that's going to relatively be able to be read by anybody on the job, followed by anyone on the job, and is right and along those lines. So I got a client, right, asked me to write a plan, and it was a subpart R plan for steel structures, and basically, it was a two-page plan. That's what it was. And then we had attachments with, like, instructions for how we're going to be assembling rack systems and how we're going to be using some tie-off systems and some fall protection stuff, things of that nature. The whole thing came out to, like, 40 pages. A lot of that, you know, you're not going to go through page by page. This is how you turn a nut, things of that nature. That's not going to happen. So what we ended up doing was they accepted the plan. They said, well, now we want a fall protection plan. This is an example of what we're looking for. It was like a 150-page plan. I'm like, who's going to read this? Nobody. What, to make ourselves sound good? Now, and this is a kicker. They told my client to go out and get competent person training, EM385-1, competent person training. Okay. They go out there and he gets the EM385 training. And then they say, well, no, it can't be online. So this dude just wasted 24 hours of his time. Because he even asked. And this is the kicker. They said, use this online LMS system that we use. See, use this for fall protection training for your EM385. Then they said, well, it's no good. We're not accepting it because it was online. So which one is it? Right? That's what the that's essentially what it comes down to. Hold on. We're getting some feedback here. I can't solve. So this is basically what he had to do, what we had to contend with here. So now he needs to do another EM385 class with a person there, you know, in-person training. Okay, fair enough. We do this. All right. Now they want, well, who's your trainer or what are their qualifications? Really? Really? They want to go in depth like that. So let's say that you're using an external training company. You're not using Jim Poulsen Safety Words, which you should be, and you're using that. You're going to go and you're going to ask the trainer for a resume? Really? And for their qualifications? I've never heard of that in 30-some years, but apparently people are doing it. And at a certain point, there's got to be pushback to this. It's dumb is what it is. Now, how many... we have joked on this podcast. We were in the podcast. I was with Jay Allen doing an interview and with Sheldon Primus. Well, Jim, how... and I think Ren Sutton went into it, too. He said, hey, Jimmy, how many continuing ed classes have you? And I said, I pretty much have had all of them from OSHA, right? And what they do down in Rutgers. Imagine me going up to the trainer. Oh, I have to want to know what your resume is, and I have to see all your certifications before I do this class. This is stupid. I'm sorry, I hate to use the word stupid, but, then you wonder why we have issues here with everything. Really, not only do they want train-the-trainer certificate, which we have. Okay, that's not so unreasonable. They want to train the trainer for the guy who's going to be training. Okay, great. Now they want an in-depth resume from that. Really? I don't know. It's just weird. Now, going back to what we said here with that, here we have, I'm going to read to you. This is where we're coming from here. And this is the epitome of blame the worker here, what I'm reading to you here. And this was sent to me by somebody. And I'm familiar with this facility. Okay. At a certain company, we have had, and I'm not mentioning the name of the company, we have had an alarming number of first aid injuries since the start of 2024, many of which happened during simple or routine tasks. Familiarity is often viewed as a positive thing. Okay. However, familiarity can sometimes be our enemy. Familiarity can cause us to overlook how dangerous some things really are. For example, something as simple as where and how you position your body can be the difference between going home safely or being injured. Most of our injuries this year and in years past have occurred while we're performing routine tasks. These tasks are perceived as low risk, but having had the most impact on individuals not leaving here the same way they came in. We often take for granted the tasks we perform on a day-to-day basis. We assume that the way we do something is the safest way simply because that's the way it's always been done. Okay, I agree with it. No, that's not a good thing. You know, hey, this is the way we've always done it. Well, that's a dangerous thing. That means there's no improvement, right? Which we don't want. However, there are likely ways to reduce or eliminate the potential risks together. When approaching a routine task or a job that you have performed numerous times, make sure to take a moment and evaluate what could go wrong. Position yourself to avoid line of fire. Set up the job right the first time to avoid shortcuts being taken. Always ask and answer the following three questions. What is the job I'm about to do? How can I or someone else get hurt? What actions am I going to take to prevent getting hurt or hurting someone else? Okay, here's a couple of points for this. It's only one document. Okay, great. One document. I got another one here for you. All right. Okay, I get it. One document, fine. How about a pattern of blaming the worker here? I don't hear anything in here as to management maybe encouraging the setting up of work safely. They're relying on the worker, and they're relying on the worker on the tool end, who is usually the most unempowered, uninspired person to work safely. Because what are they doing? Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Get to work. Get to here. Get here. Get there. You're blowing the budget. You're doing this. Do that. Right. The incentive is to get, I don't care what type of environment you're in. The incentive when you start off on that thing is to blame the worker and rely on the worker doing the whole thing rather than setting and working safely, rather than setting up a system, right, with the Jens Rasmussen modes of work, right, where you're going to have a high familiarity with the task, and you're also going to have a low attention span here, which leads to the least amount of human error. That's where how you want to set up the working environment. You want to set up a system. So you're in there, everything's going right. My question is this. What kind of management knows that this kind of stuff is going on and doesn't do anything about it? Meaning, take the bull by the horns. Say, hey, let's see what's going on. How can we do this safer? Rather than relying on the worker who has no authority or anything else to work safely sometimes. That has no incentive on that. And now every one of these is we're going to rely on the worker. What is the job I'm going to do? How can I or someone else get hurt? What actions am I going to take to prevent getting hurt? How about the management saying, what job is my worker going to do? How can my worker get hurt? Maybe I could go and ask the worker and consult with the worker. Hey, what are you doing? What job are you doing? Maybe working with the person, finding out how they're going to do the job. And right, and then you say, well, you know what? A little bit of coaching. What am I going to do to prevent you getting hurt? How can we make this a safer activity? How can we go through that darned hierarchy of controls and put in some controls on here? Do you have the right equipment for this? This is all prompting by management, and this is the way it has to be. You can't rely on the worker. Now, here's another one for you. Now, I'm going to say I have another document for you. Okay. Without revealing things. Okay, so here we have an audit document from that facility. And what they have is a yes, no, or not applicable. And it's on one of those cards, like the lottery cards, right, where you put it into the machine rather than relying on the quick. By the way, that reminds me, I kind of look at those lottery numbers the other day. But where you're trying to, you fill in the little oval and it goes to the machine and reads it and everything else. All right, so here we go. Here is what it's called, a general safety audit card. And this looks great. And what they found over the years at this facility was that if you put down anything other than an affirmative type of response on here, you got questioned and you got bullied. That's what they found out. No, that's what they found out. They got bullied. So what do you think happened? Nobody put down anything wrong. They had like a 98% compliance rate, something like that, because you got to put something down, right? God forbid, you should do that. So here we have line of fire. All right, what's your action, the employee's action in blame? Line of fire struck by, pinch point, overreaching, eyes on task, ascending or descending stairs and ladders correctly. Hard surface kneeling, meaning a knee mat or knee pads. Unnecessary stepping on pipe, rails, etc. Housekeeping and material staging. Close proximity. Now, if I were going to sit down here and answer no and truthfully on here and look at you over the long day to try to get all these questions, there are more on here. What do you think is going to happen? You're not going to be able to get the job done, and there's going to be antagonism on here with this. FRC, was it worn? Eye or face protection, was it worn? Hearing protection, hard hats, gloves, respirators. Right? Now, if you're going to do a proper audit with a respirator, what are you going to do? You're going to ask the person why they're wearing a respirator and some maybe some things about a respirator. Personal fall protection, right, and some other stuff. Now you have work sites set up. Correct tools, hoses, cords, motorized equipment, scaffold tags, barricades, equipment condition, safety or body considered for setup, overhead work. Right, this is what you're auditing with people, right? Then, can you record the emergency or know the emergency evacuation route? Know the daily toolbox talk or safety thought? Knows the job hazards, PPE and JSA and permit. Crew member participate in pre-job safety walk. Knows safety shower location. Right, and then you have other things in here dealing with paperwork. Basically, do you have the right paperwork? And we have some environmental things that go into environmental audit. So my question is this. Here we have this facility saying we have too many first aid cases. Okay, here's the question for you. Do those first aid cases, are they going to lead to a more catastrophic situation? How are first aid cases managed? Usually they go into some type of a log, which you got to have. Maybe depending on the first aid case, you're going to do an investigation because, you know, some first aid cases could be a leading indicator of some bigger problem, but not all of them. A first aid case doesn't go on your OSHA log, though, folks. Right? Maybe if you see one activity and, you know, you can use your common sense here and develop a trend, you can do that. But that's not what they do at this facility. That what historically, that's not what they've done at this facility. And this is not unique for this facility. I'm not picking on this facility. This is just what I have information on. Right, this is a very common thing. We're going to count first aid injuries. So what do you think when you're counting first aid injuries? They've had all these first aid injuries. Do you think the first aid injuries are ever going to be reported? Probably not. Right? This is at the end of February, and they've had 10 first aid cases. 10 first aid cases out of how many workers? Thousands. What's the issue here? All right. What about recordables? What about that? Right. They have some other stuff here too. Again, blaming the worker for everything. That's not what we're about here. Part of the reason why this program here, and this is season 4, episode 1. One of the reasons why this program was formed was to teach you, the safety professional, or if you're responsible for safety or an interested party of some sort, was to teach you about human and organizational performance and how to manage these situations. So how would I manage this stuff? Right now, I'm to the point in my career where I have some freedom. Not everybody could do that. What I would say is, you guys know, your upper-level management knows about human and organizational performance. I know that for an absolute fact. Why do you continue to do this? Why do you continue to do this? And I would ask a question, and I might not like the answer that I get. I would not do it in front of 50 people, unless it were warranted, and that normally doesn't warrant that. Take them on the side. Hey, why are we doing it this way? We do know that this is not the way that when we record injuries like this, so they're first aids, repeat people who are first aids, we're not going to get them reported. And the other thing is this, do these first aid injuries actually translate into an OSHA recordable or a catastrophic incident if we are focusing on them? Shouldn't we be focusing on other stuff rather than this? I tell you what, I'll take a dust in the eye versus a nail in the eye any day. One's a first aid case, one's not. I'll take a Band-Aid first aid case versus a laceration. Okay, thank God he was wearing gloves, cut-resistant gloves, because had not been wearing cut-resistant gloves, would have been, other than going into the big book of boo-boos from Doc McStuffins, this would have been in a And this is now, you know, without the glove, it would have been a recordable, right? Positive. Getting along with people. Being positive. Human and organizational performance. Work. That's what we're about. That's what you need, where you need to go here with this. Not so punitive, right? Because right now, the level of frustration I'm hearing from a lot of safety people out there, and I have heard for a long time, is this whole thing of we're going to blame the worker. Jim, they hate my guts. Jim, I'm not getting the raises. I'm not progressing in my career. Well, because they don't value your, maybe it's your approach. Maybe they just don't value safety. Now they're playing lip service. Maybe so it's something else. Where's Mike Rowe, he does a good job when he talks about safety, obviously. Right? He has the safety third thing, where safety cannot be higher priority than number three. Got to get the job, do the job, then we worry about safety. I say in today's climate, safety fourth. Are you actually going to get paid? Well, if you're not going to get paid, you're not going to have a workforce that works safely. I've been on jobs where they've had pay situations. A couple of them, some of them very recently. You're out there, you're auditing, and you're doing your thing, you're coaching, and helping everybody out, doing your move and groove, you're trying to be positive and everything. And you say, hey, can you do X, Y, and Z? Hey, maybe this will be a better way of doing things. And you get, what do you think they tell you? We ain't freaking doing that. We haven't gotten paid for 3 weeks. Or a contractor saying, you want us to get new fall protection equipment because it doesn't pass your standard for safety? Well, I said, well, look, it's not my standard for safety. Your shit's frayed. It's cut. It's all cut up. It's all damaged. The self-retracting lanyard ain't working. The carabiner is all pitted. Well, you're lucky we got that because these son of a bitch didn't pass for the last 2 months. We're forced to be here. Yeah, that goes on out there. You got to get paid. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Mr. Rowe. Let's go to commercial break. We'll come back with the news and views here. All right. And here we go.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozell at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we are back. All right. So, now, a lot of folks here, and again, it's cultural, it's age and everything. You have people out here. Who have seen the Godfather movie, right? And they have, it's a horse's head, is in that movie, a severed horse's head. You know, it's one of those iconic movies. Well, here we have, and we're kicking, yeah, this isn't safety related, but this is all from the Department of Labor. Right. U.S. Department of Labor seeks court order to stop alleged retaliation by Tennessee Farm after an employee finds a severed pig's head at his workstation. USDOL has filed a complaint and motion seeking a temporary restraining order to prevent a Henry County farm from allegedly retaliating against two workers who asked about their wages, protected activity under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Filed by the department on February 1st, and blah, 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 doesn't matter. The human resources manager from the company has been asked by the court to stop violating FLSA through retaliatory actions against employees. And the department's wage and hour division found that two workers who provided animal care to the farm's pigs cooperated with the division investigators after workers asked their employer about their pay. After the company learned of an initial complaint, the employer tasked one employee with clearing offices and bathrooms as well as picking up pig waste, activities outside of their normal job activities. After accusing the employee of filing a federal complaint, the company allegedly tries to force them to sign a document forbidding them from speaking with other employees about pay issues. Investigators also learned another worker, who has also asked about their wages, was called to meet with the farm's management and threatened with termination. Returning to their workstation, they found a severed pig's head. Wow. You know, I guess they watched The Godfather a little. All right, this is from Macon, Georgia. U.S. Labor Department cites a Macon plumbing contractor and proposes $308,000 in penalties for safety violations after workers suffered fatal injuries. Federal safety investigators found a Macon plumbing contractor could have prevented a fall fatal trench collapse. A claim the life of a 20-year-old worker and hospitalized another worker by following required safety procedures. Investigators with OSHA found that on August 10, 2023, two contractors employees were installing a sewer line pump in a trench when it collapsed. So here we have, let's see what we have. So here we have, and you know what, let me share this. Oh, ooh, we have people trying to chat with me. Let's see what we have here. Hold on. Chat. Okay. On the stream. What are you reading? Okay, I am reading right from the Department of Labor press releases. So that's all open source, and I'll be sharing them with you right now. So hold on. Here. Right, so all this stuff, again, let me explain it to you. The Department of Labor puts out press releases as well as OSHA. All right, so that's probably a good thing that I explain that. So sorry about that, guys, for the interruption, but it's an important interruption. Where am I reading from? Department of Labor. All right, so here is the, and if you're looking on the stream here, citation notification of penalty to this company. And let me remind everybody, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. A lot of these fines and citations, these are proposed. These is not the final thing. They may get litigated, vacated, reduced, or any combination thereof on here. So again, here we go. Citation one, item one, serious. 1926.21, the employer did not instruct each employee in the recognition and avoidance of unsafe conditions. So no training. How is this normally handled is with a job hazard analysis, among other things, right? Well, it's modern way of handling it. 11,292. That's why that JHA is so important. Citation 1, item 2, type of violation series. Employees were permitted underneath loads handled by lifting or digging equipment. $11,292. Citation 1, item 3. Materials and equipment used for a detective system were not free from damage or defects that might impair their proper function. Excavation located on Massey LN on August 10th. The employer exposed employees to cave-in and engulfment hazards inside a trench and that it failed to provide a trench shield free of damage and defects. Another $11,292. Citation 2, item 1. Willful serious. So they put up a system, a trench box or something like that, right? That was not, here it is. Employer deviated from the specification recommendations limitation determined by the manufacturer of the shoring used to protect employees performing sewer line installation while working inside a 21 feet deep trench excavation and did not request a written approval from the manufacturer exposing employees to engulfment and struck by hazards. $161,000 fine. That's almost the maximum, I think, on that. But now, let's think about this. Who has to be the person to do this? Probably should be initiated by the competent person, but addressed by a qualified individual of some sort. Not the same thing, right? Can a qualified individual be a competent person? Absolutely. Can a competent person be a qualified individual? Maybe, maybe not. Okay, and here we have employees are not protected from the hazard of cave-ins when entering or exiting the area protected by shields. So this is what happened was they were working or exiting the trench outside the trench box. Very common thing. $112,926 for a grand total of proposed fines, $308,000, $308,125. All right. Here, okay. All right, my mic is buzzing. Okay, I tell you what we're going to do. I'm getting... We're on that. I tell you what, we're going to go to commercial break for an extended commercial. Let me grab another microphone here. Hang on.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
Okay. Okay. I am fan. How does that sound to you now? All right. So we had to switch microphones there. Microphone hopefully is not buzzing. Buzzing here. All right. Thank you. By the way, thank you for the feedback. Right. All right. Let's go here. Lost my place. Hang on. All right. All right. U.S. Department of Labor slights a brick manufacturer. Let's see if we can share this. Hang on. By the way, we're going to be changing things here a little bit when we...
All right, here we go. U.S. Department of Labor cites Selma Brick manufacturer for exposing workers to respiratory hazards that can lead to incurable lung disease. And this is a brick manufacturer. Proposed penalties, $124,000. Probably a smaller company here. So they got some reductions. So citation one, item 1A, no respiratory protection program, $11,292. Citation one, item two, item 1B, no, where there was a respiratory, respirators were required. There was no program with that. All right, so no written procedures, no program instituted, $0 on that. Citation one, item two, no medical evaluations, $11,292. Citation one, item three, no fit testing, $11,292. Citation one, item four, training was not provided prior to requiring employees to use a respirator in the workplace. So no training, another $11,292. Citation one, item five, serious. No air monitoring, apparently. Apparently OSHA did their own air monitoring is what I'm reading here. And with this, another $11,292. Citation one, item six, the employer did not perform initial monitoring, right, with that and expose the employees above the PEL. $11,292. And these are all restful crystalline silica violations here above the levels here. $11,292 for that. No monitoring. Citation to item 8A. No regulated area for this area. Another $11,292. Item one, citation one, item 8B, no signs, right? Serious, $0 they got them on. And here is a type of violation, serious. No work practice controls, meaning increased ventilation or anything like this, $11,292. Citation one, item 10. No medical surveillance. Again, employers like, we got to do medical surveillance with this. And yes, you have to do medical surveillance with this stuff. I shared it again. Like I always have. We had somebody with a paper mask at my mother-in-law's funeral carrying the coffin who went into some type of a seizure with that paper mask on, a little imitation mask. When it's a seizure, drop the coffin. I know on paper that could work and that might happen, but I actually saw it. The employer did not ensure that each employee covered by this section can demonstrate knowledge and understanding in the following: the health hazards associated with respirable crystalline silica, going on, $11,292 for a grand proposed total of $124,212. Okay. Here we have U.S. Department of Labor cites Alabama electrical contractor after 22-year-old worker suffers severe burns at an Auburn job site. All right, at Camp Hill, a Camp Hill electrical contractor could have prevented a 22-year-old electrician from incurring life-threatening arc flash burns. Arc flashes, very hot. If any of you guys are Star Trek fans, right? Hold on. Okay, sorry, I don't have one here. They have a weapon called a phaser on Star Trek. Yes, I have a phaser. That's part of cosplay, Halloween costume. All right, plastic, type 2, right? Original series. Anyway, often what happens in Star Trek, someone gets shot with a phaser and they vaporize, right? If it's set to kill, right? So with an arc flash
injury, often it's extremely hot. We're talking like 20-some thousand degrees Fahrenheit and a very small area. And that's when there is a gap between two electrical conductors, two electrical wires sometimes. And electric goes from one to the other, and it causes heat and a shock wave. And what that's basically it. It's more complicated. I know we'll get comments on that. And what ended up happening was, what could happen is it actually vaporizes the human body on that. So the Star Trek does have some basis and some reality here. And it actually literally, that's what happens. And I know people who survived dark flashes. This is not very nice, obviously. And, you know, anyway. So here we have a proposed fine, right? Electrician incurred life-threatening arc flash burns. Yeah. Right. So usually there are fourth degree burns on up with this. We hope the guy survives and makes a complete recovery here. The employer did not instruct citation one, item one, 6,452. The employer did not instruct each employee in the recognition and avoidance of unsafe conditions and the regulations applicable to his or her environment. Again, this is, again, usually handled by a job hazard analysis with this, if not some type of a safety meeting in the morning. And again, this has to be in writing to prove that you did it. $6,452. Citation one, item 2A, serious. The employer failed to provide employees working on a live electrical cabinet with PPE, $6,452, an arc flash suit. Citation one, item 2B, this was zero, no hard hats. Citation two, item one, this was a big one, willful. The employer permitted employees to work in close proximity to energized, unguarded, and ungrounded electrical power circuits, and that the employee couldn't contact in the course of their work. $80,662. Total proposed penalties, $93,566. U.S. Department of Labor cites a Macon plumber. Okay, we already covered that one. Next, U.S. Department of Labor finds a Wisconsin wood flooring manufacturer continues to expose workers to multiple hazards at a plant. Okay, so 28. We're not going to go over all 28 of them. We'll do the proposed penalty of 269. What are we dealing with? Lockout, tagout, guarding, fall hazards, forklift repairs, operating forklifts, PPE, electrical hazards, hearing conservation, recording injuries in a timely manner, train employees on hazards associated with chemicals. So we're looking at 1910, 146, 178. We'll see what the PPE is, and let's see, what do they actually have this here? All right, here we have, we're scrolling on down. All right, company name, we're not going to give you. Citation one, item 1A, type of violation serious. Hearing protection, 1910, 95, 12. 1,421. Again, this is general industry, which has a lot more stringent requirements than construction, including a hearing conservation program that's very explicit. Citation on item 1B, hearing protection. How much does a pair of earplugs cost? Not much. Not much, but it was $0. They got them on here. Citation one, item 2A, no HAZCOM program, 1910, 1200, 1400, 12,421. Citation 1, item 2B, no safety data sheets, $0. Citation 1, item 2C, no training, no HAZCOM training, $0. Citation 1, item 2D, blah, 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 again, no HAZCOM training. Here we have a repeat violation for $24,000. And this was no follow-up on previous hearing protection issues. Citation 2, item 1B, a repeat serious one for
How much? This is very extensive. It goes on for like 4 pages. No dollars for what is a repeat violation. 4 pages of stuff. We're already up to like page 23 on this report. Citation 3, item 1. Other than serious, no hearing protector attenuation. The employer shall evaluate hearing protector attenuation. This is a little bit more common. Comments this requires. The employer shall evaluate hearing protector attenuation for the specific noise environments which protector will be used. So on or about September 13th, the employer did not evaluate an earmuffs, right? Evaluate the specific earmuffs, the blah, blah, blah. The straight line rip saw operator, and I'm trying not to use company names here, so I'm hesitating here. When exposed to a noise exceeding 90 decibels for an 8-hour time-weighted average, the employee was exposed to noise at 293% dose level of the permissible daily dose or an average sound level of 97.8 decibels as measured over 480 minutes of sampling over an 8-hour shift. This dose is equivalent to an 8-hour TWA exposure, 97.8 decibels. Remember, this is all in logarithms. Use of methods in Appendix V of 1910.95 to evaluate hearing protector attenuation specific to the noise environment. $0. So we got $49,684. Again, it's going to be a hell of a lot less, than $49,000 to comply with this. Now they get proposed penalty of $449,000 plus they probably have to spend another $20,000 to get up to speed on this stuff. It really doesn't make too much sense here. And let's stop the share. You know, it's just very frustrating here with the whole thing here. All right. Now, let's go on. Let's take another break here, and then we're going to figure things out.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
So anyway, this morning I got my phone blew up. Right, with my high school and I, we basically have a SMS group going on. And hey, this one like this. Hey, Jimmy, is your Facebook working? Is this working? And blah, blah, blah. And they didn't make an immediate announcement and Facebook was out. And so, well, thank God we're from Gen X here, right? We don't need Facebook. But people were freaking out. This goes to what happened a couple of weeks ago with the AT&T outage. AT&T, and I believe it was T-Mobile, with the cell phone. Now, we were relying on a lot of this stuff for communicating and everything else out there and keeping in touch with our people and everything else. Now, is that really the best thing that for us? I don't know on that, with that. So the question is, what are you going to do? How are you going to know? What are you going to do about it?
How are you going to, what's your communication like? What kind of capacity do you have? This all goes into emergency management, emergency response, disaster preparation, and everything else. Again, mass media keeping, keeping us on edge here with this, and why? To manipulate us. Same as everything. And have you seen the previews for the upcoming release of A24's Civil War? This is from the writer-director Alex Garland, who wrote Ex Machina. It imagines a near future dystopia where the United States has been torn apart under the authoritarian rule. This is from the Hollywood Reporter today. Of a three-term president. Right, the story follows a journalist, Kirsten Dunst, as she makes her way across freshly divided states of America. And again, we're at each other's throats in this country over the last really 14 years. You ask me, it's been going on a lot longer. It's just that people have been paying more attention over the last 14 years here. We were talking about this years ago, where we were going to eventually have some type of civil unrest and fighting in the streets. Guess what? 2020 proved that. I don't want to see a civil war. Another one. There are some people who are on both the left and the right who idealize a civil war. Guess what? It's over. Game over. We go into a civil war. Game over if you start to use political violence. Game over on this. But apparently this civil war seems to have been very timely. It got people up in the thing, and we're going to do a movie review. Right now, I am doing a slow watch of Oppenheimer, right, here on with that. And it's like, well, Jim, why are you doing that? Many years ago, I worked at a facility where they were selling the patches from the Manhattan Project, right? Reproductions, not original patches. And when I was cleaning up this weekend, I came across the patches, and I said, oh, maybe I should watch the movie, right? What a more timely thing to have other than, have, right? Put on, watch, because they've been nominated for some awards over the weekend, Academy Awards. Again, that's where we're at. So I want to thank everybody here for supporting me over the last three seasons. It's like a 313th program here. Again, we're going to be up and running and getting things done here with, we're off and we're going to be out there. My life is starting to calm down a little bit here. Things have been rough over the last couple of years here. So when we started the program, my mother-in-law had died 3 weeks into the program. We were just doing podcasts. Then my father died the next year. Then my mother last year. I had a cousin die this year and another family member come down with a major health issue that we've been dealing with. And we also have one of our guests, Chris Gervais. He went by his stage name, passed away. So it's been a little bit rough here the last month and a half, along with some other stuff going on here in the back office. And I want to thank everybody for sticking with me here and supporting us. And we're only getting better here with this. We have a lot to look forward to in our next year of broadcasting here.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.